Prang arbang rong lagi weng la gamen go ngaricing kupisha mi armen gamen go ang lagi weng la gamen go bel 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 bitilel mi armen gamen go ang lagi weng la gamen go ngaricing kupisha mi armen gamen go Ginagang Ujawan and welcome. Today you're boarding a wongala, the train. On the train journey you are about to undertake, as you leave Warramaya Wabakal country, you will be travelling through the countries of different indigenous tribes and peoples, the Awabakal, Darkanjung, Darabin and Gadigal, where a range of different languages and varieties are still spoken. Today I will be using my linguistic and cultural knowledge to interpret the landscape for you, so you need do nothing but sit back and enjoy the ride. We'll be drawing from a broad range of historical documents and oral histories to round out our story today. The challenge today in reawakening First Peoples language in this country is enormous. I've spent 20 years working in this area and I'm looking forward now to unpacking some of that story with you. This is a way for me to give you an insight into the country in the way in which I see it. Now, as we travel this northern line, at each interval, or each stop, or each gapa, I'll be joined by Mr. Gabby Duncan and Miss Sarah Kelly, who will give us an insight into what language means to them and their sense of place in country and their hopes for the future. With this podcast as an accompaniment on your journey today, you will have the opportunity to learn how these languages live on in the names of places and stations along this northern line. You will also learn about the recorded meanings and histories of these places, be able to practice speaking in a first Australian language, and hopefully gain an understanding of the importance of place in contemporary Australia. Moolabinba, the place of sea fern. Now in 1850, Threlkell wrote, Moolabin is the name of a plant or a flower that abounds at the place called Newcastle. Hence its name, Moolabinba. Now there is another significant site in this area, and it is associated with Nobby's Headland. This is that little headland that sits at the mouth of the Hunter River. A story goes that one time a kangaroo had transgressed upon a female kangaroo, and tribes, people associated with this totem, came and forced the kangaroo across into the headlands at Nobby's, and in there he was interred. They blasted away and retrieved the rocks to build a breakwall. And later Threlkeld wrote that the local people had indicated that the kangaroo was deep enough within the mountain, buried deep enough that he couldn't get out. Besides this introduction, there are 13 sections to the podcast. And each section of the podcast is meant to be listened to as you travel through the country. For now, we're going to go south on the northern line. So settle back, relax, and enjoy your ride. Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Katara. Katara, or Kutra. Locally it has been recorded as a weapon of war, but I think that's just a little shallow. In my community, a Kutra means or describes a useful tool that any of the community might use. When we think about Aboriginal writing, or words that are written about Aboriginal language, we often come across the challenge of understanding whether a K or a G is the appropriate sound. Now, we have no problem with that today because the K's and the G's are accepted as one sound, meaning they're made in the same place. Try this practice. Ku, 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 gu. Basically, they're the same sound. Now, let me give you an example of using the word Katara, or Kutra in my explanation here. When the old people taught us to make our kutramini, meaning that someone's instructed another person in the art of making a kutra, they showed us how to make our boomerang, or our kulaman, or our spear. Now, these everyday useful tools were often made of wood. They could have been shaped into a stick or a club. Say, using a stick for digging or striking or even throwing. Even though we had specific words for each of these implements, example, a woman's stick is sometimes described as a gunnai, and a throwing implement, which most of Australians today will call a boomerang. A spear is called a gunmai. Now let me just unpack these words just a little bit more for you. Boomerang, which I render as boomerang, together these words indicate that a projectile is being thrown from the hand. Now for most things to do with the hand, you will hear the particle or you will use the particle ma. Now practice this one with me. Ma, ma, ma. This word forms the basis of to do something by hand. So, yamma ma means I am about to do something with my hand. So if I use it at speed, it sounds like, naya yamma ma, I'm going to make it, whatever it might be. So here are a few of your new words for you to practice. Garmai, garmai, garmai. Now, did you hear that little rotic, that little trill? Garumai, garumai, garumai. It is on kutara, kutra, kutra, kutra. And it is made there because it acts as a glide between two vowels. Kutra, kutra, kutra. A tool, any tool that might be useful. A gunnai, gunnai, gunnai. A women's digging stick. Boomerang, boomerang, boomerang. That which is a boomerang, that is thing that is thrown from the hand. Garmai, garmai, garmai. Now, did you hear me make that rotex sound in there? That little trill. R. Garumai, 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 garumai. Boomerang, 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 boomerang. All right, that's your lessons or your words for this part of the journey.
When I think about Aboriginal languages, I feel like language really does touch on everything. When we talk about culture, we talk about culture, I guess, being all-encompassing. And I think that language has the same ability, that it's connected to everything. We're speaking Dungari at the moment within the family. I am at the beginning stages of, I guess, passing on what information has been given to me.
Well, language means a hell of a lot in regards to identity, because when you look at colonisation as such, the first thing they took from us was our tongue or was our language. And I think it was a way to colonize us. When you've taken the language and then you've taken, you know, the land, and then basically we were left almost without any identity. So language is very important as part of being who you are and where you come from.
When I think about my old people, I think that's the first thing that I remember, and the place that I kind of go back to when I think about those old people. So I can remember grandfather sitting on the lounge singing and speaking. So for me, it's a huge part of my memories and my upbringing. And for now, I guess language is at the centre of my future. So not only am I working in that space at the moment, my children are working hard to learn and connect as much as they can to the language.
Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Awaba. Many Aboriginal languages are currently being revitalised and included in educational programs around the country. Now, this study and research, while may seem like a new initiative, is not a recent movement. In fact, the very first Aboriginal English word list, later developed into a dictionary, was created by Birriban and the Reverend Lancelot Threlkeld, who lived in this area, once called Nickinbar because of its association with coal. The landscape, environs and the lake itself, which was called Awaba, provided them with much of the basis for developing their extensive language work as they documented the naming, meaning and pronunciation of Aboriginal words in this area. It is said that in this area, this is the place of the Wawai. Elsewhere in the country, or elsewhere in the state actually, the word Wawai is associated with a dreaming story of a large eel. Now it is said that the Wawai travels through the swamp areas in this area. Perhaps, like elsewhere, it is associated with the tributaries and the making of river passages. And yet it is identified not as a fish, but as something of a large water creature. It would kill the local people. So there was a great fear around this very important creature. There is this place within the lake named Boirurung, and it is said from the cliffs of which, if you throw stones into the sea beneath, the tea tree bark floats up, and the monster is seen gradually arising from the deep. Should any people be at hand, he overturns their canoes. There are many, many sites, and I'm going to draw your attention to a few of these in this area. If you can see the very large hill that will sit above Cockle Creek, this site is called Moanibang, now called Manibang. And it actually suggests that there is a site of significance for the kangaroo here. A very large hill to mountain to the right of your journey is Sugarloaf Mountain, which is called Keeper Keeper, which I associate with a kipara, which is a gathering of young men and women in specific places, obviously to their gender. Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Kurrenbong. Kurrenbong. Now this is the word that we're choosing in this area, obviously travelling through Morissette and Dora Creek. But the word comes from the local language and it means a rocky bottom creek or water over the rocks. So if we think about that and then look at the word and begin to break it up, there is another explanation that says Kurrenbong. Kurrenbong. So I'm going to use my little trill drill, which I'm going to give you an opportunity to sing along with me a little bit later, to see how this might come out. So if I can break the word up into possibilities, here's my possibility. Guru means water, or it actually means flow. Uri means do this. Bung means on top. So Kurrenbong, Kurrenbong would mean water or the flow on top of it, which would fit with this description. Now this area is a very important area, as is most areas along this northern line. In fact, just about every place has a name. Every name has a meaning and a story. Dreaming stories crisscross this country. And in this area, there are some very important sites. We call these sites a kipara. A kipara, broken up into its bit, goes kipara, kipara, kipara. And this actually means that something is happening with these group of people, a kipara. So anyway, let's try these little lessons, shall we? Kipara, kipara, kipara. There's also not in the too distant, too far away, is Kipa Kipa, the mountain range called Sugarloaf. Kipara, Kipara, Kipara. Now let's try Kurumbong, shall we? So the word for flow is Kuru, Kuru, Kuru. The word to do this is Uri, Uri, Uri. The word for on top or at that place is Ba-arun, Ba-arun. Put them together and you're going to end up with Kurumbang, Kurumbang, Kurumbang. Before we go, here's that song I said I would give you to practice. Enjoy it. It's a trill drill.
Iri uri ari, iri uri ari, this do it that, this do it that. Iri uri ari, iri uri ari, this do it that, this do it that. Iri uri 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 ari ari, this thing do this that thing. Iri uri 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 ari ari, this thing do this that thing. Iri uri ari, iri uri ari, this do it that, this do it that. Iri uri ari, iri uri ari, this do it that, this do it that. Iri iri uri uri ari ari, this thing do this that thing. Iri iri uri uri ari ari, this thing do this that thing. Iri uri ari, iri uri ari, this thing do that. Iri uri ari, iri uri ari, this do it that, this do it that. Iri iri ari, iri uri ari, this do it that, iri uri ari.
Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Wai. Wai, or traditionally, Wee. It's a word that describes fire. Now, around the country, there are these words that describe fire. Wee is a common word in many communities. Wari is another word that talks about fire. But for me, it also talks about ashes, meaning the coals. It could also mean the wood that's on the fire. So wii and wari all mean fire. But there are examples of this right around the country, as I said. Fire was important to first Australians, obviously for survival in terms of cooking food, but also in terms of land management. Today, this practice of burning undergrowth now is being called cool burning, and it is becoming a very wide practice. As we know in this country, bushfires are horrendous upon communities, and so this new practice of burning is an important new cultural movement. Let me just give you an example of how we might say that the fire is hot. So if I said the fire was hot, wiri would mean burning, wari would mean the coals or the wood that is burning, and goyerta would mean hot. So if we use these practice these words together, so here's your lesson for this part of the stop. Wiri, fire or burn this, worry the wood or the ashes or the coals, and goyerta is hot. So if we use them together really quickly, we're going to end up with wiri worry goyerta, wiri worry goyerta, and that means that the fire is burning hot. Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Tagara. Wow. And now we're at Tagara, said to be a cold place. Now, apparently it is cold in this area, but we're also in the heart of Dakanjang country. Now, these people are quite warm. They're warm and friendly. If ever you get a chance to say hello, make sure you do.
We went around with them and they showed us different places where different story events happened on the coast and what they were told as such too. Like the story of Bayami and Cohen having the fight at Nora Head, and that Bayami buried him underneath all the what is now black pebbles that protrude out of the actual beachfront. Old Tommy Sales told me that it was a special and sacred site. It's on, it's called, I think, Gravel Beach, where it is. It's next to Soldiers Beach and the Lighthouse, right in between. And that's where he said that a great fight happened between Bayami and Cohen. And this fight went from Mount Yango to the sea, basically. And so wherever they were fighting and chasing each other at the time, changed the formations of the land, and then it ended up the final blow being at on that area of Pebble Beach or Gravel Beach, and where Bayami finally buried Cohen.
Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Marimba. Marimba, said to be a place for celebration, corroboree, and rites of passage for both men and women. If we treat the word Marimba, it's a bit of a challenge. So if we think about the idea of the nga sound being difficult for English speakers to hear, then perhaps it could be Marimba. Marimba. Now this would make sense in terms of pronunciation. So Marimba would be a place where such ceremonies were gathered and performed.
So the true pronounced way to is Marimba, and the first part of that word relates to the sacred belt. Now, and people say, what is the sacred belt? But if you look at the carving of Bayami up in Karyong, where it's a magnificent, you know, you don't see a carving like that. I haven't for many years. I've seen an image like that of Bayami. But he has that Marimba on his waistline, and which also relates to the Milky Way, because we call that the belt of life. And we would imitate that way by putting a hair of each of our ancestors, either your grandparents, your mother, your fathers, your brothers, your sisters, cousins, all into one hair belt or as such or Marimba that you would wear when you actually go through law or ceremony. And that was the purpose of the family hair belt, as that they would call it. And then that belt would be handed down through the family as such when they would also have their time through law. But that's where the sacred circles, where the old people there told me that, and they showed me where the Bora grounds were, which Bora is the sacred ring.
Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Narara. Narara Station, Narara. Now, this is a bit of a challenge to you. Can you make this sound? Nga, nga. These are one of the challenges when speaking in first people's languages in this country. Nga is the sound that is made on many of these words. And so for me, Narara actually means ngurra, ngurra. Can you try that one? Ngurra. And it would suggest that this is a good place to camp. Now, looking around, you could actually see that it is probably a good place to camp. Ngurra. Ngurra.
Our old people were taken out in mass in the early days, and so language suffered with the continuation of, you know, a verbal language being passed down. Mm. And when you got the old people gone, and that verbal language that cannot or won't, can't be passed down, where we've been forced onto missions and reserves, and then it became broken language. We understood our own dialects and languages as such and connected with those, but we've got languages in the environment too that we understand through many other ways. Like when you're an Aboriginal person and you've grown up all your life in the nature of environment, you learn the language of the plants, you learn the language of the flowers, you learn the language of the animals, because they too have language. And we learn from those too, because we can recognise when a kookaburra calls or whatever, or a, you know, black cockatoo calling out, flying over, and now people might say, oh, that's rain.
Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Gosford. Just as this journey will mark and celebrate the languages of countries traversed, the trains that crossed the traditional lands of early New South Wales were not only noticed by the traditional custodians, but were celebrated in their songs. Many of our people gained meaningful employment as the lines extended. I'm now going to produce for you a song recorded by my great-grandfather, Frank Archibald, in 1968 in Armidale. The song talks about the arrival of the train into Armidale in 1883. Ongalgi wengla government go, ngarichingu bijan mi armen government go. Now what it says is that this thing came into a station puffing. Ngarichingu kupishan, kupishan. This thing was puffing as it came into the train station. Bell, 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 bichi lel. A boy got up to ring the bell. Ongalgi wengla government go. Where did the government go? Well, they went up the line further. Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Kuliwong. Here we are at Kuliwong. Now my pronunciation for this is Gulawurrn, Gulawurrn, and what it means is that a koala threw himself down here. This story goes about this nunnai. He was a fresh man, and he was lusting after these two sisters who he was chasing. Now, he was aided by two dogs who were able to track at night, so he was making ground on these sisters because they were resting and he would be catching ground on them. Now, at some point, they got to a place called Gulawurrn, or a place where this gula needed to be useful to this story. The two sisters were cooking a koala, or a gula, in this place, and the dogs could be heard coming. The sisters cut the head off of the koala, or the gula, and threw him down the hill. Now the dogs followed the head of the koala, and the sisters were then able to get away. I think this is a very important story, in particular for women. These are traditional dreaming stories that cover the entire length of this country. So in this area must have been an important, significant site to the local First People. Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Woi Woi. Woi Woi. And so now here we are at Woi Woi. Woi means water. Woi Woi means plenty of water. The meaning of this place means that it's a lagoon or a deep water or very much water. If you hear the word doubled in many Aboriginal languages across the country, you'll know that it means that it's intensified, it means more, it means plenty. So Woi Woi is a place of plenty of water. Woi Woi, plenty of water. And this is probably the easiest word that you can pronounce.
Working with the children that I'm working with now have brought a sense of hope that people, and not just Aboriginal people, but Australia-wide, is interested in Aboriginal language and I guess keen to give that a go. So I feel like there will be a time in the future where we are able to communicate with each other quite easily and on a much larger scale than what we're doing now. I feel like every second person is going to have some idea on how to speak some language or be able to communicate with each other in some way. The school that I'm currently working at has a strong cultural program and has for many, many years, so I feel like moving on to teaching a language within the school is a natural progression. It's the next step for the school. The majority of the children, the biggest response that I've got back is fun, more so than anything else. So I guess enjoying learning, but then also feeling like they're able to connect with Aboriginal peoples. I could probably pick 10 off the top of my head who are constantly running around the school and they're using the language.
Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Hawkesbury River. Here we are at the Hawkesbury River. Take a minute, look out your window. Can you imagine what life must have been like for the first people in this area? Archaeological material shows that there are middens in the area. Look at the expanse of this great estuary. Life must have been sustained for a very large group of people for many thousands of years. This is a place of good fishing, clearly. It was then and it is now.
You can see the interconnections there in all the languages. And I think we all have that responsibility. And if we can speak it right and pronounce it right, I believe that everyone is a teacher. Everyone. Get the right teachings as such from an Aboriginal person. I believe, you know, more people speak our tongue, the more that it becomes stronger and it survives. So if white people speak it, I don't mind that. Or some, they're help reviving our tongue.
Your next listening section on your journey today will be at Barawa, Barawa Gappa. Welcome back. We're now entering Darebin country, which covers much of the upper Hawkesbury region and was a site of earlier contact between Aboriginals and earlier colonists. It was in this area that Pemulwuy, an historical figure, and his followers made their base. His leadership attracted many who wished to fight alongside him in their resistance to the expansion of the colony. Many of his followers were likely to have spoken different dialects as the colonial expansion happened, and this is reflected in the different language routes found in the area. We're now at Barawa and Keringai stations. Guri Irngai. Guri Irngai. Keringai. The word Guri means First Australian. Gai means place. So if I ask you now to practice this word, this is what I want you to try and practice. Guri iri gai. Guri iri gai. And for me, this means that Aboriginal people are in this area. In close proximity to this area is a dreaming story about the koala. Now, historically, we call him a gular. So I say, when we talk about Mount Kola, we talk about gular, which means koala.
I think the thing with travelling by public transport is, because I really do love to travel, but I'm often in the car, so when you're able to be on the train, you have that moment to take time and notice what's coming and going, you know, past your window. I think it's a time where you're really able to reflect because you don't have to concentrate on anything else. But I would say that coming up to those places and being in that, I guess, state of relaxation, your mind does wander to what things may have been like before the train line was there.
We've now reached our final destination, Ngaiyariarang Yurunbu. New South Wales Rail hopes that you've enjoyed your journey and have a deeper appreciation of the place of Aboriginal languages in your daily travels and Australian life. If you wish, you can now join us in singing the train song as we say goodbye. Once again, Yari Yarar. Prang arbangarongalagi wengla gamen go ngariching kupisang mi armen gamen go anglagi wengla gamen go bel 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 bitilel mi armen gamen go anglagi wengla gamen go ngariching kupisang mi armen gamen go Prang arbangarongalagi wengla gamen go ngariching kupisang mi armen gamen go anglagi wengla gamen go bel 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 bitilel mi armen gamen go anglagi wengla gamen go ngariching kupisang mi armen gamen go.
This podcast was produced by Aboriginal linguist Dr. Ray Kelly and Brian Joyce. The voices you have heard are Dr. Kelly, Sarah Kelly, Gabby Duncan.
The Iri Uri song was sung by Jesse Hodgetts.
This podcast was produced in the podcast room facilities of Newcastle City Council's Digital Library. We acknowledge the continued cultural presence and expression of the traditional owners of the Aboriginal people of these lands.